E. Ethelbert Miller is a literary activist and author of two memoirs and several poetry collections. A keen observer of the human condition, Dr. Miller is the perfect guest to launch our Black History Month coverage with. Ethelbert, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Oh, thanks for the invitation.
A lot has been written in the past couple of years about supposedly raised consciousness of inequalities and systemic racism in this country. But for someone who has spent a lifetime among students and other young African Americans, that kind of headline in 2020 has got to be beyond maddening, doesn't it?
Well, you know, what happened when we look at social movements, there's a sort of ebb and flow. So if we look at last year, that just doesn't occur out of nowhere. You know, one could go back to like the Occupy movement. You could go back and say things began with the women's movement, the Me Too movement. And so what you see happening over in our society are various movements taking place, and it's constant. You know, it's just like a wave. And sometimes what happens is that it's the ebb and flow. And what happens is that what we saw in the last 4 years is things coming to a peak. And that's where we are right now. And how we resolve that is going to be the challenge that we face going ahead.
What are the ways that cultural dominance being threatened has expressed itself in the reassertion of privilege?
Well, I think what happens, we live in a time of social media. We live in a time in which language has been, I would say, corrupted. You know, we have words that or slogans that can become harmful that we don't think through. And that's the other thing that I think is really affecting how we exist as a society. I like to think of the fact that our level of decency has declined. It might sound a little old-fashioned, but, you know, as soon as you stop spelling words correctly, as soon as you start, like, twittering and trying to condense language, I think there's going to be some implications of how it affects our society. You know, there has to be guidelines, you know. And I'll give you an example. In social media, if you post something, say, on Facebook, you know, all of a sudden you say, okay, how many likes did I get? Well, yeah, you could get a lot of likes. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean it's good.
Okay. Right.
The same way, for example, you can see the danger that we have. And I'm a baseball person. We've gotten into analytics. We got into numbers. So when you turn on the TV, let's just say the CNN, and you see in that right side these numbers of COVID, well, then you can ask yourself, at what point when they stop posting those numbers or those numbers begin to go down, at what point will we return to a sense of being normalcy, you know? Mm-hmm. Is it all based on numbers, you see? Mm-hmm. The same way, for example, we see a lot of society in conflict, and some of it is the fact that it's a battle of narratives, okay? If I mm-hmm. watch Fox News, that's one narrative. If I watch MSNBC, that's another narrative, okay? And what I find is the problem is sometimes the same things are not being covered, mm-hmm. okay? You know, not that it has a slant, but something is just not getting covered. And so some people just, oh, I didn't know about that. You know, and that's how it is when we think about Black History Month, you know, this month now. You present certain things to white people and say, oh, I never heard of Tulsa. Mm-hmm. I never heard of Juneteenth. And they don't know. And they're good people. They just don't know. And mm-hmm. that was not part of their narrative. And then what happens is time. If I try to find time for your narrative, then I may have to cut out something of mine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just like if you're a teacher. And you say, okay, I want to introduce more things about women, more things about indigenous people. What are you going to take out? You only have a certain amount of time. And that's the battle where we are right now in terms of sharing power and sharing decision making.
Mm. I'm sure you would expect me to ask this question, and it is an important one for our listeners. How significant do you think the religious component of this has been?
Well, religion is key. You know, I strongly believe in what Lewis and King always talked about, and that was the beloved community. You know, if we go back to Martin Luther King, the book that came out after his death, you know, where do we go from here, chaos or community? the community that he's talking about is not the black community, but the beloved community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge. I feel that if we have leaders that don't have a moral compass, that's going to be a problem. If we have teachers who teach us facts and figures but not ethics, we're going to have a problem. You know, I always raise a question, and this was a number of years ago when I was at Howard University. I was always concerned about whether if someone was a student was in a school of business, would he or she take an ethics course? Okay, because I've been around on university campuses, and because like many institutions, they go through financial crisis and they have to cut things. And so what happens? You'll be sitting in these rooms, and what are they going to cut? They're going to cut the philosophy department. Why? Because they're looking at numbers. Oh, there's not. We only graduate three graduate students in philosophy. Let's get rid of that. Okay. And what happens? Not realizing that here is the importance of the humanities. Okay, that you can't have people becoming scientists and engineers and doctors and lawyers unless they have access to understanding the key questions, which are spiritual questions. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Who are we? Why am I here? Okay, mm-hmm. I think that if you don't have a spiritual base, then you can work for the oil companies. You can destroy nature because you have a certain view of like, okay, the market comes first. That's your mm-hmm. ethics. Those are your values.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so if you don't have a spiritual base, you can't go far. And then what we have to look at is even if you have a spiritual base, if it's been corroded at the bottom, okay, where all of a sudden what happens, you've gotten away from the basic fundamental teachings of, say, Christianity or Judaism or Islam, then that's going to be a problem. Because where you have those little cracks in the foundation, that's where sometimes the nationalism comes in. It fills a little space where all of a sudden you think that your faith is the faith.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's my thing is what I see happening today, in terms of this moral or spiritual presence hardening mm-hmm. to such a point that it's becoming like more Old Testament than New Testament.
Hmm. Not very successfully, but I guess we've gotten used to looking at the representation of minorities in popular culture as one barometer of inclusivity. I wish you would talk about what, if any, progress America academia, literally publishing and fine arts, have made on this score, if any.
Well, you know, when you deal with culture, when you deal with images, when you deal with things like film, paintings, illustrations in magazines, that's where we see the change. Some people would say that when the first, I think it might be Marsh McLuhan, when the first black person, you know, was on TV who could enter like a white person's bedroom on a TV set, that's when integration became a problem. Mm. Okay. What happens is that for many times, minorities are invisible. Okay. You know, Native Americans are invisible. You know, black people are invisible, you know. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that this is why many times those groups have to work in terms of restoring images or building images that might seem angry or defiant. But what happens, they have to make sure that they're being seen. You know, what happens is what we see now is this colorization of America. America is no longer just a white country. It's no longer a white and black country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is why, you know, years ago we talked about this Rainbow Coalition. And that Rainbow Coalition, you know, represents how people express themselves culturally.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's through their songs, mm-hmm. through their paintings, through their literature. And what happens, that's where you have to say, okay, we can produce this work, but do we share it? Do we understand it? Look at what just happened at Biden's inauguration. People saw Amanda Gorman, you know. Wow, she's a young black poet.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Well, she's a young black poet, but the young people, almost her same age, years ago were changing the South. She's no younger than say, a young Julian Bond. You know, John Lewis, he's no younger than that. But what happens, we're seeing her for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? We saw her dress and we saw her age. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, those are the two things that we focus on. And so what happens is that, yes, you can have this representation, but if it's not seen and then understood, then it means nothing.
Mm-hmm. What are the areas of greatest concern for you today as the country seems poised to sink once again into a kind of self-congratulatory denial of the systemic problems that so universally exist?
Well, I think, you know, I was just reading something yesterday, which was a breakdown of the people who attacked the Capitol. And what we find out is that when you really break down who the people are, where are they from, you realize a lot of people are not, we're not from the red states, you know. A lot of people were not unemployed, you know, that all of a sudden you have like professionals. You know, you had people who pretty much, you know, existed in a blue Biden part of the country. But what happens is that they found out, I guess, felt that their views were not being heard, that, you know, there was too much a sense of other people taking gains at their expense. And that can be a problem. But every time you see like a black person getting promoted, you feel, okay, that's a position I could have had. Mm-hmm. Or, for example, there's an emphasis on issues of race. Then you feel, okay, I'm white and they're not talking about me, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and that is where we are right now. How we resolve those things takes leadership, and it really takes the fact that we have to make sure that we acknowledge the mistakes that we've made. Mm. You know, we've made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Ethelbert, I am fortunate to have published a number of books. You are the author of several, in addition to writing the poetry that has earned you that honorific, the Dean of DC Poets. What's the role for this kind of publishing in today's Twitter speed, short attention span culture?
Well, what happens, you have to instruct people, and this gets into like parenting, you have to instruct people to do the heavy lifting. You know, it's not going to all be carry out, you know, quick and go. It's not all going to be buffet. You know, you're going to have to learn how to set a table, you know. And so what happens is that's where the rigor. You know, I look at, for example, people talk about sports. I'll take someone like Steph Curry on the Warriors. They say, well, look at how he's shooting these threes and it's almost automatic. Yes, because he practices. You know, and that's what happens. It's not any sort of athletic ability. He's like not really bigger than many of us. But what happens, it's a skill, just like a musician. He has to practice, okay? Mm-hmm. If you want to be a good writer, you have to practice. And what happens? It means you have to pay attention to craft, structure, punctuation, okay? So you've got a lot of people, you know, okay, they're you know, changing the words, the spelling, things like that. That's good if you can spell. Okay, if you think this is phonetic, that's how you hear it, and that's how you spell it. Well, what happens, and that has a lot to do with social media too. You can get away with anything, and there's no critic. There's no one to tell you that you're doing the wrong thing. You know, you can see happening in terms of we are have a generation that's almost giving up on parenting. Put your child in front of a terminal, you know, a computer mm-hmm. screen. You know, and I'll go do what I have to do. Mm-hmm. Well, how many of us are going to put our phones down to pay attention to terms of learning how to read critically? Okay, read critically. Mm-hmm. And many of us don't read critically. Or what happens, we skim. Okay? Mm-hmm. Or what happens, you have contests where, okay, I'll give you a T-shirt and a mug if you read a book. Well, there's no bribing in terms of that. You either have to learn how to be taught the enjoyment of literature, and you have to be taught the difficult. I remember I was being a workshop, and there was a woman in this workshop, white woman, who went into like the public schools in Baltimore, and she did this. She was teaching like Ezra Pound. You know? And somebody said, well, you're teaching Ezra Pound to these black kids? Yeah, I'm going to teach Ezra Pound because I know after they read and master Ezra Pound, if I give them a Langston Hughes poem, they're going to understand it very quickly. You know? And what happened, she believed in her students. She believed that they could master the very difficult things, mm-hmm. you know. And that's something that, you know, that's how we have to teach. We can't say, for example, that youth is always right. There's mm-hmm. a role for elders to correct youth when they make mistakes, you know. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that this is a way in which if we're going to move ahead, we're going to have to say, okay, let's get back to fundamentals.
Yeah.
Let's get back to fundamentals.
Ethelbert, as you watch the clumsy way our society has struggled with indicting truths and ugly realities, are you hopeful about the future of this nation? And separately, is there one important consideration that you see being ignored in the earnest but often simplistic conversations that we're hearing around race and justice in 2021?
Well, you know what happens? If being an artist, you have to be hopeful, even if you paint pictures of despair. You know, even if you write books there or you sing the blues, you have to be hopeful. That's what you do. You know, I feel that as an artist, my job is to sort of like explore the wilderness, you know, to prepare for what could come. You know, I want to see the possibilities. That I think is key. But then in terms of what the challenge is, it's very simple. And people like Baldwin writes about it. We're caught up in a lover's struggle in a society. And if you look at that battle, the struggle, if you ask yourself, it is very difficult loving one person, okay? there's a lot of bad marriages out there. There's a lot of relationships that are not making. And what happens? It's work. And if you don't want to put the work in, then you don't know what love is, okay? You know, and that's the challenge, okay? You know, I'm not even saying love thy neighbor. I'm going to talk about first loving yourself, okay? Within many minority communities, there's a certain degree of self-hatred. I could be Asian and hate my eyes. I could be, you know, Latino and I hate my color. That has to be corrected. Okay, that's why we have Black History Month with Carter G. Woodson, to make sure that if a black person looks into a mirror, okay, they're going to be positive. They're going to love themselves. But what happens after you look in the mirror and love yourself, you can't be narcissistic. You have to say, okay, let me turn and now look out the window and see the world and love the world too. Okay, and I am realizing that when I go out there trying to love somebody, there's going to be disappointment. If there was no disappointment, there would be no blues. and the essence, the blues is survival music. The blues is saying, yes, your house is gone, your woman left you, but you're going to have to get out there, get up out of bed, and deal with whatever's coming tomorrow. Okay, and that's what we have to think in terms of America. What we've seen people running through the tunnel with the Confederate flag, what's coming next? And I tell you, what I saw yesterday, you know, where here you have Green being applauded, you know, by the Republicans, and I wrote a thing. I said, oh, this is Green, and now here comes the Browning of America. Because what happened, you know, this is like somebody like Hitler, you know, playing a club in a cafe in Germany somewhere, you know, Austria. And what happened, what's coming? You see, and what is coming is because we weren't silent. The same way we can see that because Donald Trump questioned Obama's birth certificate, he became president. That's how he got started. Now, this woman doesn't want to believe in 9/11 and the Parkland shooting. What's going to happen to her? And I can see this woman, okay, all due respect to Nikki Haley, she could be running against Kamala Harris, two women. Running against each other. But then the green person can emerge. And what you can see, and this gets back to this conversation, it's nothing but branding and hustling. And this is where you realize there are people with no moral fiber, no profiles in courage, you know, thank God for Cheney standing up for principles, you know, and this is what has opened the door. Okay, so everything we're trying to do as artists is to correct this and make sure that this narrative is not co-opted. Okay, you know, we've had over the last few years the best chance and opportunity for all of us to finally understand what's in our Constitution. Okay?
Yes. Yes.
And this is the catch. What we don't accept is that there's two constitutions. Okay, not the first one, you know, that everybody wants to cite. You know, the Scalia. No, it's the second one, the one that emerges after the Civil War, the one with all those little amendments. Okay, that's the second one. Okay, that's the one if you're gay or you're disability. Yeah, all those things in there where you're expanding it. Okay, that's where the Constitution begins. Okay, and it begins at the same time that we've had a Civil War, so we had to start over again and get it right. You see, and what happens is that the same way people want to put up Confederate monuments after, you know, Reconstruction to push especially black people back onto the plantation, make them sharecroppers or something. You see right now in 2021 trying to take those monuments down because there's a movement, okay, that has to fulfill the promise that we had after the First Civil War. We can't go through that again. Okay? And this is the thing that if we don't have a moral compass, like say like someone like Lincoln, You can't get through this. If you cannot stand up on principle, you know, this is what John Kennedy, and a principle. You mean to tell me that you are going to be in a party and support somebody that doesn't believe in 9/11, you know, the Jews have some sort of laser, you are going to stand with that? I don't know how you can go home and love your family. I don't understand that. And this is a challenge where right now, what we saw happening yesterday, for me as an artist, I have to be hopeful that, like in Jonestown, that the grilled cheese sandwiches and Kool-Aid are not being handed out.
We're going to have to get together again and help answer the question that that you just asked. Yes. E. Ethelbert Miller is a literary activist and author of two memoirs and several poetry collections. He hosts the WPFW morning radio show On the Margin and the Scholars of UDC TV, which received a 2020 Telly Award. His latest book, If God Invented Baseball, was awarded the 2019 Literary Award for Poetry by the Black Caucus of the American Library Association. Dr. Miller, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Well, I hope we can stay in touch. Many blessings.